"Fascinating," said the patrician, and went back to not listening to Dibbler. He had not got where he was today by bothering how things worked. It was how people worked that intrigued him. Further along the row, Sol leaned across to his uncle and dropped a small coil of film in his lap.
"This belongs to you," he said sweetly.
"What is it?" said Dibbler. "Well, I thought I'd have a quick look at the click before it got shown." "You did?" said Dibbler. "And what did I find in the middle of the burning city scene but 5 minutes showing nothing but a plate of spare ribs in Harger's special peanut sauce? I know why, of course. I just want to know why this." Dibbler grinned guiltily. "The way I see it," he said, "if one little quick picture can make people want to go and buy things, just think what 5 minutes worth could do." Sol stared at him. "I'm really hurt by this," said Dibbler. "You didn't trust me, your own uncle. After I gave you my solemn promise not to try anything again, you didn't trust me. That wounds me, Sol. I'm really wounded. Whatever happened to integrity round here?" "I think you probably sold it to someone, Uncle." "I'm really hurt," said Dibbler. "But you didn't keep your promise, Uncle."
"That's got nothing to do with it. That's just business. We're talking family here. You've got to learn to trust family, Sol. Especially me."
Sol shrugged. "Okay, okay.
Right?"
"Yes, Uncle," Sol grinned. "You've got my solemn promise on that."
"That's my boy."
At the other end of the row, Victor and Ginger were staring at the blank screen in sullen horror.
"You know what's going to happen now, don't you?" said Ginger.
"Yes, someone's going to start playing music out of a hole in the floor."
"Was that cave really a picture pit?"
"Sort of, I think," said Victor carefully.
"But the screen here is just a screen. It's not, well, it's just a screen. Just a better class of sheet. It's not..."
There was a blast of sound from the front of the hall. With a clanking and the hiss of desperately escaping air, Bizam's daughter Calliope rose slowly out of the floor, attacking the keys on a small pipe with all the verve of several hours' practice and the combined efforts of 2 strong trolls working the bellows behind the scenes. She was a beefy young woman, and whatever piece of music she was playing, it was definitely losing. Down in the stalls, the Dean passed a bag along to the chair.
"Have a chocolate-covered raisin," he said.
"They look like rat droppings," said the chair.
The Dean peered at them in the gloom.
"So that's it," he said. "The bag fell on the floor a minute ago, and I thought there seemed rather a lot."
"Shh,"
said a woman in the row behind. Windle Poons's scrawny head turned like a magnet.
"Hoochie coochie," he cackled. 2 pence more and up goes the donkey."
The lights went down further, the screen flickered, numbers appeared and blinked briefly, counting down. Calliope peered intently at the score in front of her, rolled up her sleeves, pushed her hair out of her eyes, and launched a spirited attack on what was just discernible as the old Ankh-Morpokian civic anthem. "We can rule you wholesale." The lights went out. The sky flickered. It wasn't like a proper fog at all. It shed a silvery, slaty light, flickering internally like a cross between the aurora coriolis and summer lightning. In the direction of Holywood, the sky blazed with light. It was visible even in the alley behind Sham Harger's House of Ribs, where 2 dogs were enjoying the all-you-can-drag-out-of-the-midden-for-free special. Laddie looked up and growled.
"I don't blame you," said Gaspode. "I said it boded. Didn't I say there was boding happening?"
Sparks crackled off his fur.
"Come on," he said. "We better warn people. You're good at that."
Click, 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 click. It was the only noise inside the Odeum. Calliope had stopped playing and was staring up at the screen. Mouths hung open and closed only to bite on handfuls of banged grains. Victor was dimly aware that he'd fought it. He tried to look away. Even now, a little voice in his own head was telling him that things were wrong, but he ignored it. Things were clearly right. He'd shared in the sighs as the heroine tried to preserve the old family mine in a world gone mad. He'd shuddered at the fighting in the war. He'd watched the ballroom scene in a romantic haze. He was aware of a cold sensation against his leg. It was as though a half-melted ice cube was soaking through his trousers. He tried to ignore it,